Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance as a force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing? And how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So, see you on Friday.
See you on Friday. Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone from all around the world.
Hi, and welcome to our second episode at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's, meaning with Ben and myself, Svetlana.
Today, I'll start our show first acknowledging one of the most important things that happened 2 days back, the inauguration of President Joe Biden.
Yoo-hoo!
it's very funny, but I know him since quite a long time, but that's a different story. So he not only committed to bring U.S. back to the Paris Agreement, but he also put a stop to the controversial Keystone XL pipeline and has committed the climate change as the big focus of his presidency.
And actually, if all of you didn't hear what he said, I'd like to give a little quote. He said that a cry for survival comes from the planet itself, a cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear now. And this is why we dedicate the second show to climate change and involvement of the financial sector in this challenge. So today we will dive deep into European Investment Bank actions towards climate change and see how could they support you. Because what we will learn today is like, what is European Investment Bank at all? What do they do? What do they invest in? What are concrete investment examples of European Investment Bank? And what is their investment criteria in great detail? So if you have a project or investment fund related to climate change, that they could potentially support you. So if you are one of those, this show is definitely for you. Use this opportunity to ask your questions, which you can post, and we will take the most interesting ones and ask our guest speaker directly. And maybe, Ben, you want to say a few words about yourself before we start.
Thank you. For all those who don't know us, I am Ben Banerjee. I'm born in India, grew up in Holland, and the last 10 years living in Switzerland. So among many other things, I have set up companies all around Europe. And I'm a member of a couple of think tanks, teach at the universities. I'm also in the head of the Swiss Impact Investment Association, which is the biggest association of impact investors in Switzerland. And I'm also in CLC, the Climate Leadership Coalition, which is the biggest organization of business or business organizations in Europe who are implementing climate change in their daily business processes.
And I'd like to add to that that Ben is really inspiring and a great leader who has a lot of followers from businesses. And it really, it's if you have a chance to get Ben as a mentor, you would be the luckiest business, I think. He would make it try.
Thank you, Svetlana. Normally speaking, she's the one who knows all the content. I just talk, but she really knows what she's talking about, especially on the finance, banking, and investment sides.
Well, to add to this, so yes, I'm an ex-banker, but engaged in for many years in impact investing industry. And I also set up an organization called Galileo International Impact Investing Center, which is nonprofit, where we raise awareness about impact investment, provide accessible education. And we are the platform for connecting investors with projects and also giving people opportunity to engage for sustainable development goals. Don't know how you guys, but I met a lot of frustrated people in different professions, IT guys, bankers, consultants, which all want to do something for this planet, but they really struggle what to do and where to engage. And maybe with this, I can give a very brief introduction to our community, which is called Chamomile, Chamomile Impact Community, where you can meet inspiring speakers like today's guest, Elina from European Investment Bank. You can meet many other investors. You can meet great experts, projects, and complete your mission. We have a lot of tools there available, and please join us at chamomile.ch.
Ah, and the second part of the story, what I was just saying, is our vision is to teach and educate people all around the world on how to use business and finance to become a part of the solution and not the problem. And by solution, I mean solve the 17 SDGs of the United Nations. For Svetlana has taught more than 1,000 professionals and entrepreneurs and set up their businesses and act on SDGs. That's why they call themselves the impact business. And that also facilitates or opens doors for those businesses for impact investors and transport them. So what you can do is follow or attend our program that we do. It is free. And it's a coaching and training session. The next one is on 9th February, which will be also, I think, it's around this time. Or I can, if you see the slide, you will see at what time it is. And what we will be doing is that I'll support the businesses with structuring and business development and how to seek funding and to set up companies in Europe or all over the world. And also, since I have set up so many companies, I have gone through the basics and all the Murphy's laws of the problems that companies and businesses have when they want to set up in this sector of impact investment.
So the time is 19:30 to 21 p.m. And the program is called Entrepreneur of the Future. So any business who wants to be successful in the long term must consider environmental and social aspects of the business, so include our dear planet and people around you into your business, which will make your business growing even more. So profit is there, environmental impact is there, and social impact, all united. And this is what we actually call impact investments, when you invest in such innovative businesses, which make thrive everyone around. And with this, just let me check. Is our guest already joined us? Ben, do you know if Elina is? Just a second.
She's supposed to be coming in just now.
Okay, we are waiting for a second.
Or Svetlana, if you can speak about the criteria of what is the definition of impact investment, because you are the expert in that.
Oh, yeah, I can speak for hours. I can speak for hours. What is that? And actually, we can start from a bit before. What was before impact investing, right? So once upon a time, the people couldn't sleep at night and they decided to create responsible investing, meaning that they said, okay, let's exclude few industries like tobacco, cigarettes, porno industry, gambling out of our investment scope and be more responsible with our money. And they called it responsible investing. Some people say, well, it's okay, but it's not good enough. We can do much more. Let's proactively select great businesses based on environmental, social, and governmental criteria, so ESG or sustainable investing. When we talk about sustainable investing, we mean that these businesses define certain criteria like reducing CO2 emissions or reducing waste, empowering women, so putting more women into power positions in top management. I would address this topic specifically to many banks which still lack women at the top positions. So please do it if you didn't do it yet. And so while implementing these criteria, of course, business become more sustainable and employee become more happy. And in the long term, it's proven that those companies generate also more returns, so they are more successful. However, what is the issue? Nowadays, a lot of companies call themselves sustainable, and a lot of blue chips, which are now trading at the financial markets, are also called sustainable, which doesn't solve our challenges which we face, meaning 17 SDGs, right? Like accessible education, poverty, accessible healthcare, action for climate change, and so on. So the next step after sustainable investment is impact investing, where we have an underlying mission in those companies. So those companies are trying to solve one or several SDGs, sustainable development goals, besides creating a financial return. And this is a huge step forward. Why it's important to understand what is what. So we need sustainable investment as well, and we define it like a broad impact, which is those huge corporations are generating. It's great impact. We need that even more. However, we also desperately need more capital into impact investment to be allocated in order to generate true deep change. So we call it deep impact. And I hope I'm not going in too many details without any supporting slides here, and the audience can follow us. And just maybe one last point on that. So impact investment, those who don't know what is the current market, it's around $800 billion. And it's grew dramatically in 10 years from 50 billion to 800. And however, it's still a tiny number. It's less than 1% of all assets around the planet. And this is why it's so important that we encourage policies, encourage our financial regulators, banks, we create education, awareness on this topic. So more capital can be allocated into impact investing, which generate real change in the world. And in order to take an action, we need to understand what is sustainable, what is impact. Otherwise, if we call it impact investing, but still do the old thing on sustainability, nothing will change. And this we'd like to avoid. So, Ben, is Elena now available for joining us?
She's here because there was something problem with the link. She couldn't log in. But okay. Now we welcome Elena to the show now.
Oh, great. Yes. Yes. Very
hello,
good.
Elena.
Hi, Elena. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Impact with Banerjee. Great. Thank you. Where are you now? Luxembourg.
I am in Luxembourg. Yes, indeed. Actually, it was very nice and snowy still last few days. But now, unfortunately, we have rain again and the snow is gone. So now it's gray. But otherwise, you know, we are keeping up the spirit.
That's great. Could you please introduce yourself maybe a little bit for our audience to know who you are, or what's your background, how did you end up at EIB?
Right. So as a short introduction, I have been invited to this event due to my recent appointment as a head of EIB's newly created climate office in our operations directorate. I have to say I'm actually quite new in the climate scene. Before I took up this new challenge, I was heading EIB's corporate lending team that is responsible for the bank's corporate financing activities in 11 Central and Northern European countries. Before joining EIB, that was already back in 2006, I worked several years in EBRD, which also is an IFI, so my career is clearly skewed towards international financial institutions. So I worked in EBRD in London, financing economic transition in Eastern Europe and in a former Soviet Union. However, I did start my banking career in commercial banking in Finland. In Nordea Group, as it's called nowadays, but already at that time I worked in international banking, and again my focus was very much on financing in transition economies. So that is, so I have a sort of banking background, but very much focused on promotional finance and working in institutions that are sort of in the twilight zone between banking and policy.
Thank you, Alina. You mentioned the name EIB a couple of times, but all around the world, people are not aware of what is EIB. Can you introduce EIB a little bit?
Of course. I mean, it is very often that you assume everybody knows about what EIB is. EIB is EIB European Investment Bank is really the bank of the European Union. We have a long history. The bank was established in 1958 by the Treaty of Rome, and with the mission to promote growth, employment, and cohesion in Europe through financing. The original focus was very much on building back financing of critical infrastructure. Although nowadays, while we remain true to our overall mission, we are also very much engaged in supporting private sector, in particular innovation. As well as small and medium-sized enterprises, together with our bank partners. The bank is owned directly by the EU member states, and in fact, which is an unknown fact, actually, very often, we are the largest international financial institution or multilateral financial institution in the world. I believe that we are twice the size of the World Bank Group. Our Whoa. Balance sheet is approximately 550 billion euros. Last year, our annual financing volume hovered around 70 billion.
And now it is a question, Alina. Sorry to interrupt. How yes. much of these assets are invested in impact investing?
That is a question that I can't actually answer. I was trying to look into this when I was invited to this event, but that is something I can't answer. However, what I would like to say there is that we have made now, at the end of 2019, we made an announcement that we want to transition to become not only the EU bank, but the EU climate bank. And that by 2025, 50% of our annual financing volume should go to green investment. Last year, the number was around close to 40%. So we Wow. have made quite good progress in getting to this 50% target. And we also are when we finance investments, we do assess them also. We assess these investments not only as far as their financial merits are concerned, but also as far as the technical and economic aspects are concerned. And in that context, we do expect our projects to adhere to the prudent social and environmental standards, and we do promote these type of aspects also when it comes to our investments. So in fact, we do assess the impact of our financing mm-hmm. from that perspective.
Okay, I was just thinking that in the Paris Agreement, we committed that we should stay within 1.5 degrees. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I was looking, even despite of the COVID-19 enforced change in the lifestyle, the damage to the environment is ongoing. Emissions of CO2 has increased, and the financial sector, the last I read somewhere, as per the financial sector is developing, mm-hmm. it is heading for a temperature change of 5 to 7 degrees. So how do you say EIB is different? So what are the bank's mission or the bank's key operational principles, which makes EIB different to the rest of the financial sector?
Good news from that perspective is that when we announced our climate ambition at the end of 2019, one of the three objectives or operational targets was that we align all our new activities to the Paris Agreement, so below 2 degrees temperature goal and to resilient low carbon pathways by the end of last year. And we did spend a lot of time and energy last year to define the criteria for our assessment, for our Paris alignment assessment. And indeed, we announced our framework then in November last year when we published our Climate Bank Roadmap. That is the sort of a car guide towards us transitioning to EU Climate Bank. So in a nutshell,
one available, Alina, sorry, just for the audience, you know, if they want to check this roadmap, is it publicly available somewhere or?
It is publicly available. It is, you can find it from our website. And indeed, that document quite in detail describes our criteria. How are we going to assess the Paris alignment when it comes to the investments that we finance? And I think there the highlight or the headlines are that we are moving away from financing investments related to fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. We'll be also refraining to finance capacity expansion of airports, and we will be focusing on projects that contribute to decarbonization of industries and in promoting green innovation and deployment of low carbon technologies. So there are some maybe key takeaways from our Paris alignment framework.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're talking about projects, right, and a lot of our audience, I'm sure, are having projects or investment funds, so what sort of criteria the project and promoters need to fulfill to gain the access to European Investment Bank funding? I think this is, everyone wants to know how to get the money.
How to get money, indeed. That's a very good question, and maybe I should start with the fact that we are very much still a wholesale institution. So the projects that we finance, both in the public sphere or with the private promoters, tend to be relatively large projects. When we talk about EIB support to small and medium-sized enterprises and in financing of projects with smaller scale, we do that together with our bank partners. So we provide financing to our financial institutions that then channel these funds to the projects to the predefined projects or projects and investments that fulfill the predefined criteria. So that's maybe one thing to consider. Secondly,
so do I understand it right? Just to like to make it crystal clear, you know, for the audience. So basically, yes, you provide funds only for banks, which then allocate the money further. You don't provide it directly to funds or projects yourself.
We do, but typically the projects then are relatively large.
What is so the number? Like how large?
Well, I think this is not. We do provide smaller tickets, but typically the projects that we finance have a total sort of investment cost in a range of 100 million, minimum of 50, so to speak. Yep. So these are very larger projects, larger and undertakings. We do finance also directly small projects in certain specific areas. And when it comes to higher risk venture debt capital, for example, mm-hmm. but EIB is not sort of a retail oriented bank. And when we talk about SME and mid-cap financing, that funding is channeled through financial institutions. So
we talk more about this criteria, like you impose or kind of you say to the banks, okay, please apply this criteria to channel the money. And what
that is
those criteria? What is those criteria? And which banks are you working with? So, like, who would be your bank to talk to if some projects or funds wants to get
right.
money, which are from you?
We have, of course, different instruments and different type of conditions attached to different type of financing. Typically, indeed, when we work through the banks and we provide them loans to support the SME sector. The conditionalities are geared towards, of course, the size of the company, but also the projects indeed do need to meet adequate social and environmental standards, certain activities are excluded. As I said, we are not engaged in financing fossil fuels. We are not financing gambling or arms trading, production of tobacco and alcohol, and so we have sort of an exclusion list where activities that are not financiable or support that we don't support are ruled out. Those are kind of the key conditionalities. Maybe we also have specific credit lines or the credit lines specifically targeting green investment, where the conditions then are more specifically geared towards that space or energy efficiency support that we channel through the financial institutions, where again the criteria is adjusted to ensure that the projects that or the investments that are financed meet those criteria. Just to maybe say that around one third of our annual lending goes through the financial sector, while the two thirds of our financing is associated with projects that we finance directly. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the direct projects, the projects have to be bankable because we still are a bank, and yeah, they have to be technically and economically viable. Those are sort of the really high level basic conditions. And finally, final point here is that all the financings that we get engaged to need to support one of our four current priority policy objectives. Mm-hmm. Which are innovation, support to SMEs and mid-caps, environment and strategic infrastructure. And these priorities do mirror the key policy objectives of the European Union, because we are the EU bank, and hence our activities are there to support also the key EU policies.
Mm-hmm. It's a very structured answer, and like from the finance, for finance people, it sounds perfect. Maybe could you provide an example of such project to make a story a little
more,
bit to
make it more people can tangible. Relax?
Like, yeah, exactly. What kind of project did you finance?
Of course.
Especially because your website also mentioned you have you do it in 71 countries. So
we do.
Yeah.
We do finance projects not only in the EU but also outside. But one has to still remember that 90% of our annual lending goes to the European Union or investments and projects in the European Union. So the 10% outside, it is not a negligible number, of course. We do also outside EU, we work typically through EU mandates. Alongside with our own or financing from our own resources, but we are very much supporting the EU policy objectives also outside the union. So actually, when I was thinking, I was sure you will ask about examples because yeah, they exactly. are obviously more
you
illustrative.
Should be well prepared,
than,
no?
Yes, so I kind of prepared myself for this, this, and I wanted to give you two examples. One is a project that we have financed inside the union. It's a project in Greece, in Athens. It is a project where we are supporting, which I find very, very interesting. We support the implementation and the investments that the city of Athens is taking under its own resilience strategy. And we focus in particular on the green pillar of that strategy. And there, the financing then supports, for example, investments in nature-based solutions, improving the functioning of the urban ecosystem, investments in green and blue infrastructure, such as in parks, greening public spaces, and green corridors in the city, in the urban environment. What also makes this project very interesting is that it is supported also by EU contribution. It benefits from natural capital finance facility that is there in particular to boost investment in natural capital, and the project also combines a technical assistance component that is there to help the project promoter in project preparation and implementation of the nature capital facility, as well as then of course the green pillar of the Athens resilience strategy. So all in all, we are financing, we are providing a loan. EIB is providing a loan of 50 million for these undertakings, and then it as I said, it is supported by 5 additional millions from the natural capital facility, which is the commission, which is a commission instrument. Mm-hmm. So
another question, so I don't forget.
Yes.
How long did it take for this project? Like, what was the process, due diligence process, in order to get the money? I don't know if you were involved, but if you know, could you share with us, please?
I wasn't involved, so I can't specifically answer this question. But indeed, the due diligence process in this type of projects tend to be relatively lengthy. I'm not saying terribly long, but indeed,
it can be.
When a banker says lengthy, I get worried.
Yeah, no, but these are very complex. As I described, these are rather complex projects involving a number of parties, and of course, multidimensional sort of investment programs. So it's not necessarily that EIB is particularly onerous institution to deal with, but it is something that if you want to develop and make sure that the project is indeed sound and you have considered all the aspects, you do tend to spend some time making sure that all the interests are aligned. I would say on average, in EIB, when we look at larger direct projects, from the point when you start the work with the promoter and then you sign the loan contract and are in the position to disperse, I would say that it probably will take something along the 9 months or so, or 6 to 9 months, if everything is relatively straightforward. Of course, you always can have complications and the processes and get lengthy, but these type of complex projects obviously take time to put together.
It's like a baby, no? 9 months, it can be complex.
Yes, but it can be complex indeed. And, the preparation always takes time. But then on the other hand, you then are able to make sure that the projects are also successful and benefit all the parties.
Yep. And is it usually a debt or equity investments that are undertaken by the EIB?
Right. Good question. Our traditional instrument really is the senior debt, long-term senior debt. But we are also nowadays able to provide financing for different layers of the capital structure. So we do provide also on the other end of the spectrum, if you may, venture debt as well as equity type of financing. It's a bit of a smaller scale, and to allow us to provide such type of financing, we are also leveraging very much on the EU budgetary resources in when we develop such instruments. So we have a large spectrum when it comes to financial instruments, but it is debt. We don't do direct equity investments. We do that if we can do that through fund structures, but not directly. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to very higher risk instruments, there we very usually have risk sharing partners, namely and specifically the European Commission.
Okay, so you are not the only shareholder, right? So are you main shareholder, or like how do you usually like to allocate your investments?
Again, we are debt provider. We are not investing equity directly to the projects. So we do not become a shareholder directly in those operations or projects or companies or entities we finance. And as far as our debt investments are concerned, we have a rule that we only finance 50%. In certain cases we can go higher, but typically 50% of the projects or project cost, as if you may. So we always want to see that we crowd in other financiers. We do not want to be the only financier. In outside EU world, we very often cooperate closely with other MDBs, so the multilateral financial institutions or multilateral development banks. And in the EU, we do co-finance projects typically be with private investors, financial institutions, as well as then the relevant public entities. So I hope that kind of clarifies. So we are not an equity investor, and when we invest as a debt investor, we want to see others alongside us.
Yeah, I understand that completely. And actually, it's like a chicken egg problem, you know, because we were working also a lot with projects, trying to get funds for them. And unfortunately, it's what a lot of times an obstacle for the project when they come to a bank, not EIB, but any other bank, even development financial institutions, then they say, okay, get another investor, and then we come in, right? So nobody wants to take risk. And do you see that? I mean, we need to take risks sometimes and allocate risk capital, especially development financial institutions, right? If you want to create impact and like still put it in the traditional finance shoes, we will move very, very slowly, right? So how can we motivate EIB and other banks to take some risk and to put the money, maybe be once in a while a sole investor, to make it easier for the projects, so for them to get the finance quicker?
Maybe 2 points. First, we do believe that our participation very often actually does motivate other investors to join in. It is about the sharing the risk and sharing the burden, so to speak. But it's also that we do bring on the table our economic and technical expertise. And especially when it comes to more complex projects or projects that involve specific technologies, other investors quite appreciate the fact that EIB is there to give some sort of a quality insurance, so to speak. The other point is that we are fully acknowledging the fact that while there might be capital available, but the capacity to share risk is a more scarce resource, so to speak. And hence, we have been developing these higher risk instruments thanks to also our ability to tap and leverage on the Commission or on the EU budgetary resources. For example, we have developed an instrument where we get risk cover from the Commission targeting sort of demonstration projects in the area of clean transport and also on clean energy, where we really go into financing of projects that are at the very early stage of development between in this valley of death, so to speak, where you have the concept, but you are trying to get to the stage where you can commercialize, and there often the financing is not available. You are not anymore you are not anymore in a space where grant financing is available, and definitely not at the scale that you would require. Maybe your equity investors are already thinking that now would be good if there was also some debt coming into the company, but the debt investors are not yet there, in particular if the project concerns a very new technology. So these type of projects we have been trying to support in recent years with the instruments that we have been able to put together. Thanks again by the support of the Commission.
Thank you for sharing and for taking my challenging questions.
It's very difficult to come in when two bankers are speaking. I had a very basic question to start with. You mentioned a couple of times green projects.
Yes.
How do you define green, or what do you mean by green?
This is a very interesting question, and I think that has been debated in the markets as well, and has been one of the issues, how to bring transparency into the market. And what we have, the EU taxonomy in a way is an attempt now to bring some discipline and standardization and create a common level playing field on when we talk about green. And as an EU bank, I think it is quite natural that we have made a decision that we will be aligning our definitions of green with the taxonomy. The earlier mentioned roadmap gives a quite good description on our green definitions. And as the taxonomy now develops and the delegated act gets approved, we will be adjusting so that in the future, what we call green is translatable when one knows the EU taxonomy.
Okay. No, I'll just jump in to take one question from the public. Mm-hmm. The audience, somebody asked, when investment in restoring nature would realize our climate goals much faster and cheaper, with less risk and with more social impact, what would be the investment policy of the EIB in the future?
Nature-based solutions biodiversity is on the top of our agenda in terms of when we think about where we would need to be more impactful and in what direction, when we think about where we should be focusing on in the future. I think the challenge again here is to institutions like EIB is that these projects tend to be relatively small and possibly fragmented. So we would need to find a way to aggregate and cooperate with actors who can help us to channel funding to such initiatives. The other, what we discussed, I think, Ben, earlier, one of the other challenges is that how to monetize these type of activities. Yeah. Because in order to invest, you do need to see that these investments are yielding financial returns. Yeah. And sometimes, these type of investments it is difficult to see, especially in the private sphere, where the returns would be coming from. So I think we need to work on monetizing sort of nature assets in order to attract investment. Yeah. But also then do work with the public hand to promote support to these type of activities.
And there, I think your background would be most helpful because you are from Finland, like you mentioned, and you are one of the
yes.
few in Europe who understands the best how to live in harmony with nature.
Yeah, well, I think for us, if you look back in history, in the very recent past, we got famous as producers of mobile phones and technology, but historically speaking, Finland has been standing on wooden legs. So the forest has been the source of economic growth and prosperity mm-hmm. in Finland, and in order to preserve that wealth, we obviously had to, and we were motivated to live sort of in harmony with the nature. You didn't obviously want to destroy that wealth. So I think that has motivated Finland to develop and also pay more attention and sort of spearhead many of the initiatives that indeed are contributing also to the fight against climate change.
Exactly. And can EIB, this is also a question, can EIB influence banks around the world and in Europe on their climate-related policies and investment allocation, for example, in climate projects?
Mm-hmm. I think we can. I'm not going to say that EIB is the panacea to
yes, we can.
To fix the problem, but indeed, we are active participants in the dialogue that is ongoing in the financial sector. Plus also when we work together with our bank partners, we do require, for example, certain environmental standards to be upheld. And we are trying to promote now also banks to take up more green financing. And we are developing not only financial products, but also advisory solutions and advisory propositions to motivate and incentivize banks with us to develop their green financing activities. And I think while this is important in the EU, but very important also outside, where I think the capacity building is really essential in order to direct financial flows to green investment.
And if we go a bit outside of EU, right, in Switzerland, so do you collaborate anyhow with Swiss National Bank? He's your neighbor.
We do cooperate also with EFTA countries. So we do have projects in that region as well. We have dialogues obviously with relevant partners also outside the union, also with Switzerland. I have to say that I think Switzerland is also doing relatively well in this area compared to many, maybe for some other regions and countries that still have a higher hill to climb, so to speak.
It's all relative.
It depends, yeah.
It's all relative. It
depends with what you compare.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's always true. Yes, that is always true, of course.
How big everything is it? Yeah, sorry to interrupt. How big is resistance if you like trying to incentivize the banks to do more or to invest more in climate change? Like, how do you do that? Do you educate them or like say, hey, guys, you must now do that? Or like, how do you do that? They are listening and taking action, because this is what it's about, right? For us, it's important that people take an action with their investment.
Yeah. First, I would like to say that yes, we speak a lot about the financial sector not doing enough or being complacent, but I do see very positive developments also in the financial sector towards with regards to going green. We have examples of banks already making announcement on their Paris alignment commitments. And also boosting their financing activities and making policy statements in this regard also beyond Paris. I would also, of course, one has to recognize that the regulatory framework is changing fast and clearly is pushing the financial market to pay much more attention to the sustainability and greenness of their operation. If you look at the non-financial disclosure space and the regulatory push to report on climate relevant risks and activities with the EU taxonomy coming up, I think it is. While I would argue that sustainable investing makes perfect business sense, it is also now very much on top of the regulators' agenda, and hence the banks need to take this much more seriously than they may have done in the past. And I think with us, we have very positive dialogue with our partner banks, mm-hmm. and many of them in a recent past have been very interested in collaborating and cooperating with us in this field.
Mm-hmm. Another question from the audience. So does EIB provide regular technical assistance on climate finance to local actors to develop their domestic capacity?
Well, yes, the short answer is yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Point.
But advisory service, we provide both upstream and downstream advisory, so project preparation and plus project preparation and implementation support. But we do this under different programs and envelopes, in cooperation with the outside stakeholders, mainly with, again, with the Commission. So we do not provide sort of generic advisory services, but our advisory is directed very often to a specific thematic area. As we spoke about the banks, but we are putting in place advisory, helping banks to ramp up their climate finance in the SME space. We do advisory in the energy efficiency space in particular, and we do sort of advisory linked to specific projects and undertakings. But I would, if you are interested in our advisory offer, you can again find a lot of information on our website on different advisory opportunities that are available to our promoters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I can jump to the next question also asked by our audience. She writes, thank you, Alina, for your insight on the functioning and goals of EIB. Which steps is EIB undertaking to boost cooperation with local institutions in developing countries on climate adaptation?
We are in those countries where we operate. We are working in many regions very closely with local financial institutions, and I think that the climate finance in the future will be higher even on our agenda when we talk about our interventions and our cooperations. And of course, when we finance larger infrastructure investment, we are there also to support the promoters to in project preparation and project implementation. What we have not been very active in is the upstream policy work with the local authorities and actors. But we are considering also ways we could get more engaged, in particular in the climate space, already upstream to help the local actors to develop their projects, for example, to consider resilience and adaptation aspects and bring these projects to the stage where they are financeable. Because outside the union, that is sometimes an impediment. We can only finance projects that are existing and are there to looking for financing, and we need to develop that pipeline, and we are cognizant that we can play a stronger role there.
And what was the other story of a project where you invested? Because you talked about
Greece. That's true. I completely forgot.
I know one project was missing. Time for a little story again.
So I was searching again and thinking which project to mention. And this is relatively recent projects that we have signed. An 80 million loan in Cambodia to support the modernization of irrigation infrastructure and water management in the rural areas. And I find this project very inspiring because it is a project that will have a significant positive impact on the local population. It will help the farmers, build on farmers' capacities, also take into consideration the gender aspects, because a lot of these small rural farmers are actually women. So the project is also expected to contribute to gender equality. Again, the financing is supported by technical assistance that will again build the capacities and knowledge on sustainable farming, and it will entail investments that are not only directed to sort of enabling infrastructure, but also infrastructure that is building on resilience, namely enabling flood control, for example. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a project that has many sort of impactful aspects. It's, you know, as I said, supporting the farmers, sustainable farming, building capacities, and also contributing to climate resilience, and it takes also into consideration the gender aspect.
Now, maybe I'll throw in an idea. So what happened is, do you know Kofi Annan? He initiated this project called the Alliance of Green Revolution in Africa. Mm-hmm. So they were supporting farmers in Africa, especially the small farmers. But then it turns out 90%+ of those farmers were women. So Africa mm-hmm. is being basically fed by women farmers all over. But then COVID came. So these farmers got not only very badly hit, because most of their farming is anywhere rain-fed. They are not. They don't have irrigation supply system and everything. Mm-hmm. With the climate change and with the COVID, unfortunately, since these women are small businesses, or I mean, they are not businesses, they're just farmers, no help is reaching them. Most of the help is going to institutional support or big projects. But these women who are feeding the Africa, and basically African population, you must be knowing, is one of the fastest or maybe the fastest growing population in among the continents. So my question would be, this is not one aspect. The second aspect is, you know, that the world, did you report last week or something, 17 scientists in the world came together and wrote a report that the situation is much worse than before. So if you look at this, do you think that just focusing on investing in green and sustainable assets is enough? Don't you think that EIB should also start investing impactful?
I do think that. And we are not only, I think we are making effort, and it's actually embedded already in our quality controls and due diligences, that we do also consider wider impacts of our investment. We do consider gender and also the social aspects that relate to our investment or the investments we finance, as well as the other wider economic impacts that the investments will or are supposed to have. However, you are right, these are aspects that we assess when we invest. So we want to make sure that social and climate standards are adhered to, and that the positive economic impact is created through the project, and certainly not negative impacts are being generated. But I think what we can even do better is to indeed proactively try to help the project promoters and design our finance in a way that the impacts are from the outset that we expect positive outcomes. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it, you know, many of the projects I do believe that we finance with certain advice and support can be enhanced when it comes to impact. Yep. Just as a sort of a personal example, I remember once I was involved in a project on financing of housing infrastructure. And of course, you know, you can argue that financing housing infrastructure per se is important, because you need to, you know, allowing then affordable housing and with the good quality to come to the market with and have people having access to rental property. But when we discussed with the promoter, a very enlightened promoter, I also discovered that in fact with certain design choices you can actually make these projects very impactful. You can through, for example, integrating certain social infrastructure to the housing projects, utilizing nature-based based solutions in the construction and design of the wider sort of spaces, improving security and safety with just something to do with the lighting, improving social integration with, again, certain choices when it comes to what kind of facilities you integrate into the housing, into the neighborhood or into the project. So I think it's also about awareness raising, and we can, as an investor, we can also have that conversation with the promoters about smaller or sort of design choices and investment decisions that don't require sort of overhaul of the whole plan, but that mm-hmm. actually can have very, very significant impact to the end users and to the society at large.
I mean, as a climate, I'm in the Climate Leadership Coalition, and as a climate somebody who works for it, I think you can also support with cross-selling. For example, you must be aware in the city in Finland, in Espoo, they have created a part of the city completely using eco-friendly wood. They have even made multi-storied buildings with eco-friendly wood, which is mm-hmm. a technology which only till now Finland has. So when, for example, I'm just thinking out loud, I'm not a banker, so I'm just thinking. So when next time somebody comes to you and says, for example, we want financing for development of a city or development of infrastructure, you can always, just an idea that you can always say that, oh, then look at this and this aspect, maybe you can do it in a much more sustainable or much more environmental friendly way.
That is absolutely true. And again, maybe you building on your housing example and mine, we have supported energy efficient construction over past couple of years. And specifically sort of requiring promoters to adhere to higher energy efficiency standards than those demanded by the regulation. Now the regulation has also kind of caught up, but our intention was indeed that we would sort of promote the standards that are higher than those required. So I think you can do that, and you can sort of motivate promoters to consider impact and make them to do the right choices if you like through your intervention.
Then just another question, because you mentioned you changed from corporate finance to green and sustainable investment. What inspired that?
Well, what inspired that? I would first maybe say that if you look at my sort of career, I have spent most of it in institutions that are driven by a certain mission and a purpose and a policy goal, not only by sort of maximizing the maximization of returns. So it's been sort of always there. In EBRD, it was supporting the transition after the Iron Curtain dropped up, was yep. pulled down. And in EIB, it has been very much on so far on supporting the economic cohesion and innovation and employment in the EU. And I think the climate, my moving to climate finance kind of builds on that trend, so to speak. The second point is that, of course, I would say that we are in a health crisis at the moment, but ultimately, as you alluded to that already, Ben, the climate crisis and the emergency is very serious, and we do need to take action. So having that said, that being able to contribute actually, it gives me great purpose. again, sort of renewed purpose to continue. I do believe strongly that with smart finance, you can make an impact. So, and that, again, I think I have seen it in my own eyes through my career so far that, money can catalyze a lot of good things. If you deploy it smartly. And I want to really contribute to that, actually. And maybe finally to say that I have a long track record in financing projects. I do believe that I will be able to contribute of turning the great ambitions and strategy to sort of concrete actions and operationalize these targets. And that's why that motivates me, and that's why I think I wanted to take up this challenge when it was offered to me.
Thanks for sharing, Elina. And I can't agree more than that, you know,
because
we all in the same board. And I remember financial crisis, you know, I was still studying, and I was then thinking already back in 2007 that, oh my gosh, what am I studying? You know, I wanted to do something good with finance. How is it even possible? Everyone is blaming. And when I was a banker, I never could say this pride. I'm a banker, you know, because everyone like kind of was small. Once the people ask, what do you do? I said, well, I'm a banker, but, I also do something else in life. So it's great that nowadays there are departments in any banks in sustainability and also European Investment Bank, which allow bringing back the pride, which I believe can be at for anyone in the financial sector, right? Because finance can move indeed so much and be force for good. So yes. I really agree with that.
Yes.
I remember I was in Netherlands in the 2007, 2008. I think if you would have said you worked for ING or ABN AMRO, you might have got lynched on the street.
I would tell you, no? Put lynches on you next.
Yeah, those were maybe not the best times to be a banker, but I do believe, and maybe this is naive or a bit simplistic, but I do believe, finance or sustainability and purposeful activity is not sort of fighting against making money. I think you can still make good returns and still, be impactful be a sustainable investor. And I do believe strongly that in the future, in order to be successful and investor, you do need to consider these aspects much more thoroughly. And sustainability and impact has to become, part of the investment decisions. I think investing without, investing without thinking or giving consideration on, for example, climate risk or social impacts, I think that would be reckless, because I do believe your investments probably are not going to be particularly successful, at least not in the long to medium term. So, I think we would need to move away from this thinking that it's something ring fenced and special, and investing sustainably or impact investment is sort of a little specific club and something very unique. I think we need to start thinking about mainstreaming that
this is our mission.
But it's about demand and supply. I mean, we know that there is a lot of demand for good green or sustainable investment. We just have to make also sure that the investments are there. As I said before, the investors can only invest if the investments are there and they are they are prepared and structured in a sort of a way that can the way that they can be financed. So mm-hmm. I think there is a lot to do also in the impact investment area that support is needed for capacity building and project promoters to make their projects, so to speak, financeable. Exactly. And I, yeah.
You cut off most of, this is what exactly I teach. You cut off my speech, half of it.
Sorry, you should have told it. You should have given me a more precise brief.
And you know, by the way, not only normal businesses need to be transformed, but also a lot of NGOs nowadays or foundations, they are also allocating assets into impact investing because they see, you know, it's much more beneficial also for the project themselves if they make it financially viable, yes. Their business models, you know, so in the long term. A lot of NGOs are also transforming projects, which is the ones which are possible. I mean, not all projects are possible to make financially viable, but the ones which are possible, we should definitely do that. Yeah. Can I ask you the next question? Because we are still in COVID-19 and pandemic situation. The rules, again, are a bit stricter here in Switzerland. I don't know, how is it on your end? So how has actually COVID-19 impacted European Investment Bank and its sustainable mission? You know, has this brought about any specific changes or challenges in the operations and mission of EIB?
Well, I would say that we are very much committed to contribute to the recovery and alleviating the impacts of COVID. But at the same time, we are as committed to our climate goals. So we do, you know, I think we the key word is green recovery, really, and building back better. So we have clearly said that the climate bank ambition remains, and ultimately, I think in order to create sustainable recovery, you do need to also you need to support projects that are in line with the green recovery principles, and also mm-hmm. are contributing to the sustainability objectives more widely. So of course we have stepped up our COVID actions and deployed a number of instruments in order to sort of help in on the short-term recovery, and in particular the SME sector to survive these over these very extraordinary and difficult times. But at the same time, our climate quest continues, and we haven't sort of diverted from that road due to COVID.
But I remember that countries like Netherlands and Finland, they wanted, especially Netherlands, fought very strongly that the green part should be linked to the support money used by European Union for countries. But somehow Netherlands was kind of in the minority, that they could not link climate change or the green investments with the support money.
Yeah, I mean, again, I do. I can't really comment so much on the EU political debates, but I do, from our perspective, again, we are committed to our 50% with or without sort of the COVID efforts that we are making. And if you look at our results last year, we increased our climate finance share quite significantly up to almost or close to 40%.
Yeah, exactly.
So at the same time, we did also boost the COVID related actions. So I think it shows that we do adhere to the building back better principles. And what has to be mentioned is that we do adhere to our Paris Alignment Framework for mm-hmm. all our financings, including those activities that we do on our own account for COVID. So we are not relaxed. We haven't relaxed our standards as a result of our COVID response. But of course, you have to recognize that if you, for example, want to focus on helping the health sector that is in a dire straits, mm-hmm. then of course you have to maybe at that point of time recognize that maybe there isn't that much sort of that qualifies green if you support vaccine development or helping the hospital infrastructure to cope. So I think we also need to be cognizant that there are also areas where the support is needed and well justified, mm-hmm. even if it's not directly contributing to the green, it's still contributing, to my mind, to the sustainable development and the well-being of the society at large.
Yeah, I mean, there, I think the next question would add up very good is that what is the European Guarantee Fund and how does it help struggling businesses?
Well, again, I personally have not been directly involved in this particular activity, but the European Guarantee Fund was created to indeed help EIB or allow EIB to support through financial institutions, SMEs and mid-caps, so share, you know, provide liquidity and share somehow the burden and motivate the financial institutions to keep financing this crucial sector. The Guarantee Fund is directly supported by the EU member states who are providing risk sharing or guarantee instrument for the bank to allow the bank then deploy the funds that are in particular targeting small and medium-sized businesses throughout Europe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have another question from the audience, and it's related to European Central Bank. So does EIB has contact with European Central Bank on system risks related to climate change?
The answer is yes. We have the dialogue with the European Central Bank, and while we are developing our internal climate risk screening tools, we are of course taking or also taking inspiration on what other institutions are doing, including the European Central Bank in this field. So the dialogue is there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Another question from the audience, and actually very nicely addressed to you. Dear Elena, the past economic crisis and the current one due to the pandemic show how the financial market is fragile. What is the question here?
Yeah, the second part.
Yeah, and the second part is, should the impact investment focus on the real sectors? I would like to know your opinion on that.
I think, to be honest, I think we need to somehow, this is my personal view, support both. I mean, without the functioning financial sector or healthy financial sector, the real sector will not have access to finance. So in a way, we do need a financial sector to be there to channel the financial flows to the real economy in a appropriate manner. As for EIB or public hand, I think these times there of course is maybe case can be made that we also have to step up our our support directly to the real economy, which we have also done. But again, I do believe that the at least as EIB, as far as EIB is concerned, we are not able to reach out to the small and medium-sized businesses without our banking partners. So we do need to also make sure that they are capable and have the means in a way to do and support these smaller projects and smaller companies to overcome the crisis.
Mm-hmm. And one more question coming from the audience is, is there any program to support startups working on a climate domain? Do you offer funds to such companies?
Well, actually, the EIB group is actually, which I didn't mention, has sort of two parts, the European Investment Bank, and then our sort of subsidiary European Investment Fund. And the European Investment Fund is in particular focused on financing SMEs and mid-caps, again, through the financial sector, but not only through banks, but also being very large fund investor in funds. And through those, they also invest in funds that support, again, clean tech and low carbon technologies, and also startups. EIF also has activities where business angel type of activities. So startup financing, it's as far as is more focused on is more on EIF's domain. But as I said, we also in EIB, we have the venture debt product that we are offering. While it's not maybe for startups exactly, but for companies that are already existing, but indeed want to sort of are coming to the want to go to the next stage in terms of development. And finally, as I said, we do support sort of demonstration projects in certain specific technology segments where you could speak about also more of a startup type of financing, because these are ventures that are at the early stage of development and the future is still a bit unknown from that perspective. Mm-hmm.
This question was actually posted on all possible social media, so I think it's an important one for many startups are looking for funds. So, thanks for answering that. Yeah. I think we need to round slowly, and I'd like to ask you a question about the future. So, what do you hope for the future of impact investing, and how do you see it becoming more popular within the financial industry in the coming years? When do we become the new normal?
Well, that is a very good question. And I, of course, hope, if you ask what I hope for, I hope that it's rather sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I am quite positive about it. And what I actually hope for is that in the future, we don't really talk about impact investing, but it is something that when we invest, the impact is integral part of the decision-making process, so that we consider that as an element of every investment we make. So we are not maybe yet there, but I think in order to get there, it is of course the capacity and capacity building on the financial and investor community and awareness raising, because in order to invest impactfully, you need to be able to understand and assess the impact and bring sort of standards and transparency to that end. But as I mentioned earlier, it's also about the supply, so that we have capacities or enhanced capacities to structure and bring investments into the market to be financed that have been put together the impact in mind, so to speak. So that we are able to sort of mainstream and make the supply and demand in a way meet, because I do believe that the demand for more impactful investments that also show promise for reasonable financial returns, there clearly is a demand for it, and I believe the demand will be growing. But it is also about the supply. And I think we very often talk about why aren't the investors more active? Why isn't more money flowing in such investments? But I think we also need to be cognizant that those investments are not always there. And hence, I think we need to work on that end as well.
For this, we need also sometimes to invest in more risky projects.
That is correct.
Of course, I agree with you. Of course, we cannot invest in very risky projects neither.
You need to take calculated risks. But I do think also that the fact that you would have a positive impact and with the project and with your investment doesn't need to be associated always with high risk. As I mentioned a couple of examples, it's not so much about the risk, it's about how you structure the project that you actually consider these impact aspects when the promoters consider that and make their investment decisions. So it's also about that, I believe.
Oh, I apologize for Svetlana. She really knows what she's talking about. I should have warned you, Alina, before that. But thank you so very much for your time and for making it to our program. Unfortunately, time ran out, and I couldn't believe it went so fast.
No, it's been a really, really interesting conversation, and I could probably talk for another couple of hours.
We have to set the next meetings also. We will set it up.
It's been really a pleasure. From my side as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been inspiring. Thanks a lot for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. Thank you.
Have a nice weekend, everybody, and thanks you for listening. To the audience and your very insightful questions.
Thank you,
Alina. Thank you very much. Do you want to make an announcement, Ben, or should I make it?
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, then for this, thank you very, very much for your time and everything, for attending and watching. And next week we have another amazing speaker. That's the President of the Republic of Mauritius, who has two issues she can talk a lot about. One is the climate change and how climate change is impacting her country. And secondly, about women empowerment in Africa, because she is doing a lot on that topic. So see you all next week, exactly same time on Friday. Bye-bye.
Just last comment, act and impact. See you next Friday. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance as a force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing, and how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So see you on Friday.
See you on Friday.